Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Greetings, saints, and welcome to the Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour. We are broadcasting live from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is February 16, 2017. The world is in turmoil. Most don't realize it, but we are in that time of the end, and that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin in the world and look to the holy city. Look to the one who suffered and died for you. Hear the sound of the shofar. Heed the warning. Get right now before it's too late. Please, please, please make this choice tonight if you haven't made it already. If you need help after the program, call me. I'll pray for you or with you. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, and or message. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682. And an emergency, my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. Now, you can always find updates with the breaking news, Wichita Mission Church radio program archives, contact information, and so much more at our ministry hub, which is very simple. Located at prophecyhour.com. Of course, you got to put that www thing in, but if you Google prophecyhour.com, that you're going to get it. Remember, prayer requests can be sent by United States Postal Service as well as by email with your return address and phone number to call you back. If you wish, these requests will be taken to the Wichita Mission Church, anointed with, prayed over, prayed over and sent back to you at your request, and no solicitations for donations. No, we're not just trying to get your address so we can drive you crazy with donation once. We don't do that. My wife says we just lose the address. Anyway, we're a national satellite radio program, which is simulcast live on the net internationally, live on YouTube, and some FM stations. So please pray about supporting airtime. Airtime isn't free, and it isn't cheap, so pray about supporting it. On another note, I want to thank our listener base that is worldwide in places like United Arab Emirates, Auckland, New Zealand, Colombia, Australia, Sydney, Australia, Jerusalem, Israel, Bucharest, Romania. You know, folks, I'm going to quit putting ones up there that I can't pronounce the names. But anyway, of course, cities in the United States, such as Washington, D.C. That really astounds me how Washington, D.C. is really picking up, how many people are listening to us over there. Anyway, Stockton, California, Corpus Christi, Texas, Buffalo, New York, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Atlanta, Georgia. These are just to name a few, of course. We won't forget Wichita, Kansas, which remains the largest group of listeners to our radio programs when they podcast later tonight. Hey, and you folks over there in Wichita, you know, we serve egg sandwiches, folks. I know we'll get to the program. We serve egg sandwiches from 1 to 3. So eggs are on sale in Wichita for 79 cents a dozen. Consider getting some and dropping them off and give you a good chance to see the Mission Church. Now, prayer will bring on tonight's guest. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, I pray that radio tonight goes according to your will and not ours. And please, Father, give everyone out there ears in which to hear the truth, understand the truth. So please, Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, amen and amen. So today we bring back on Leo Holman. He joins us again to talk about his new book, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. The last time I talked to him, I hadn't yet got his book and read it, but, you know, this book should be on every shelf in this country. I just can't tell you how much. Anyway, Leo is a veteran journalist and is news editor for online news giant WorldNet Daily. Of course, we have a lot of WorldNet Daily people on, with a particular focus on immigration and Islam. If you subscribe to WorldNet Daily, you'll get his post, and believe me, he has some really good articles that come out. Prior to joining WorldNet Daily, he worked for more than two decades as a news reporter and editor in a suburban Atlanta and Charlotte and Raleigh, North Carolina. His book, Stealth Invasion, again, is one that should be read by every American and belongs in every library in this nation, for that matter. I go so far as to say the world, except some of those countries that, you know, where these people come from. Anyway, while we have a new president and new hope, one can only wonder if it's still not too late to stop the invasion of our country, as Islam is a religion, if you can call it that, with one thing that's really at its center, and that is world conquest. So welcome back, Leo.
Very pleased to be back here with you, Pastor Dan. I enjoyed the sound of that shofar. It woke me up here in Atlanta, Georgia. So it's a little bit past my bedtime.
Oh, well, I didn't realize that. You know, if you ever come back again, we can have you on. We do a program at 5 p.m. Central, and so that could have been 2 hours earlier.
I'm just joking.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, that shofar is to wake people up. And, yes. You know, I've been on radio for a long time, but we didn't start that shofar until the Arab Spring started, and that's when we started blowing
the
shofar.
Well, I think it's very appropriate for the times in which we live. People definitely do need to be woken up, not just physically, but spiritually.
Yeah, amen. And that is the thing. People, I don't see, to me, they're hand in hand. You know, if you wake up spiritually, then the things that you need, you're going to know what you need. If you're woken up spiritually, it will wake you up to what's around you, or it should anyway, shouldn't it?
Exactly. That's the whole reason I wrote Stealth Invasion. It was to wake people up to what is going on right around them. So many books you read, you know, and it's about stuff going on in Washington or Jerusalem or New York or, you know, some other big city. But this stealth invasion has been happening in middle America, you know, places like Owatonna, Minnesota, and Rutland, Vermont, and Owensboro, Kentucky, and Twin Falls, Idaho, and even smaller places that nobody's even heard of. So,
Lancerville, Georgia?
Yeah. I mean, it's really amazing.
That'd be a good place to start. I don't mean to interrupt you. Yeah, fantastic book. But Lancerville, Georgia, that story in your book just really knocked me over. I heard a little bit of it on the news media.
Lawrenceville, Georgia. Absolutely. Yeah, that was a bizarre story.
Yeah. Why don't you tell that story?
Yeah, sure. There is a good salt-of-the-earth middle-class family living in this town outside of Atlanta, north of Atlanta, maybe, I don't know, 30, 40 miles, called Lawrenceville. And they live in this very modest neighborhood of, you know, 1960s and 70s brick ranches. And one morning, the mother of the family was sitting in her garage. Her name is Damie, and Damie was sitting in her garage with her daughter, Brittany, sipping coffee. It was a nice sunny morning on the day after Memorial Day last year, so I guess it was about June 1st last year. And as they're sipping coffee and admiring the flag that was flying from their mailbox, put there for Memorial Day, it was fastened to a PVC pipe about 5-6 feet long and flying from their mailbox. And they were just talking about how pretty that flag looked, Brittany said to her mom. And before you know it, some woman comes out of the woods dressed in a full burqa. All you could see was her eyes, slits of her eyes. And she's in this black burqa, and she's rather tall, over 6 feet tall. For a woman, that's pretty tall. And,
yeah.
She grabs the flagpole off of the mailbox, snatches it off, and attacks the woman and her daughter in their garage. and starts beating the mother with this 6-foot PVC pipe. And they get wrestling, and mother's trying to fend her mm-hmm. off. Daughter jumps in. Daughter first runs into the house and tells this brother, get the gun, and then goes out to help her mother. And they had just finally, the two women, the mother, the daughter, I forgot to say, was like 17 years old, so she's like right. almost a full-grown woman herself. Right. And so Brittany and her mother are finally getting the woman detained, and a neighbor woman also came out to help. So it's three women finally wrestled down this woman in the burqa, this Muslim woman in the burqa, and the son comes out with the pistol, and he aims it, but he, thank God, did not shoot because he made a good decision. He was only 14 years old, 15 years wow. old, and he did not pull the trigger, thank God. And so nobody was severely injured, but the mother did have some cuts and bruises from the attack. And so what you have here is a case of what it seems like a clear case of a hate crime.
Yeah.
A Muslim woman who, they didn't know her. She was a complete stranger who just simply didn't like the flag, apparently, and so she grabs the pole and starts beating the woman with her own flagpole. And the police came, and they did not even remove the woman's burqa. They said that that would be discriminatory. And they turned the case over to the FBI for possible hate crimes. The FBI dismissed it out of hand, did not even interview the victims or the witnesses or anything, just summarily dismissed it. And the local police only charged her with a mere misdemeanor, a simple battery. So this is a, can you imagine, Pastor Dan, if it had been the other way around and a American had, and it turns out the woman was a Somali refugee. And so could you imagine if it was the other way around, an American beating a Muslim refugee with a flagpole? Do you think there would be hate crimes charges filed?
Oh, instantly. They wouldn't have hesitated. They would have arrested the woman and took her off to jail. They probably would have arrested everybody. They would have arrested the kid. You know what I mean?
Right.
Everybody involved. They'd have dragged them off. Clear and clean. This is clearly special treatment.
Yes. And then we had another case I reported on in the book. These are real live incidents, you know, happening here on the ground in the United States of America. And in this other case, it was a upscale neighborhood in Minneapolis, one of the nicer neighborhoods in the city on Lake Calhoun, lakefront property. And for three straight days, a gang of Somali refugees terrorized the neighborhood. They came in with cars, rode over people's lawns, screaming obscenities and jihad, yelling jihad as they run their vehicles through. They beat up a dog. They and then on the second night, they threatened a young lady in her a young woman, attractive woman, blonde hair, in her 30s. They pull up, and while she's taking her garbage out, they start gawking at her and yelling, "Oh, we like you. We'd like to marry you." And she said, "No, thank you. That's nice, but I'm already married." And she starts walking back to her house, and one of them says, "Well, in our country, we could rape you." And made a threat. That's an outright threat right there. And under Sharia law, they said, "We could rape you." And so that was turned over to the police. And do you know they never even made an arrest? And in both of these cases, in Lawrenceville, Georgia, and in Minneapolis, the local media also downplayed the incidents. There was one small report in the Atlanta newspaper about the Lawrenceville incident, and in Minneapolis, the major paper there, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, completely ignored the incident. There was one report on one local news station in which the woman in her 30s testified to what happened. They put her face in shadows so nobody could, you know, see who she was. But that was the only coverage there. So you know, it reminds me of a third case in the book in Twin Falls, where a little 5-year-old girl was sexually assaulted by 3 refugee boys from Iraq and Sudan. And when myself and a couple of other conservative news agencies, Breitbart was one of them, reported on that incident, not only did the local media downplay it, but they attacked the conservative media, WND and Breitbart, for reporting the truth. And so we see these trends starting to occur that is eerily similar to what's gone on in Europe over there, when you've had the rash of sexual assaults and rapes going on in places like Sweden and Germany and the UK. The media has done its best to cover it up. And so...
Well, let me intercede for a minute. Now, you bring up over in the EU, and I've been watching, you know, of course, I've been watching it all real closely, and the predominant thing that struck me is that people don't get is like the man said, he said, well, in my country, I could do this. Well, you know, when you bring all those, allow all those refugees into the country, and they've lived that way all their life, how could you expect different? And by that, then why would you even let them into your country? Because clearly they don't want to assimilate.
Well, exactly. But see, they don't have to assimilate because they get preferential treatment from local law enforcement and the media and the churches and pretty much all of society. And if anyone does report on it and anyone does question what's going on, they're automatically branded as a bigot and an Islamophobe.
Well, there's a good point. You mentioned churches, and in your book, let's talk about there's a lot, we go to the refugee ban, and there's a lot of kickback. I noticed that in the kickback that against Trump and the refugee ban, that some of the people that were leading the charge against it were churches. And I looked a little deeper, and I found in your book that there's 9 agencies that serve as fronts for the government to, you know, to take care of them. You care to address that?
Yes. Of these 9 volunteer agencies, they call them volunteer agencies, or VOLAGs for short, you have these 9 VOLAGs, and what they essentially are is government contractors. They contract with the government and get paid to provide services to the government. In this case, they resettle refugees in, you know, over 300 U.S. cities and towns. And 6 of these 9 VOLAGs are affiliated with religious organizations. You have the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. In there, you have got the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. You have got Episcopal Migration Ministries. You have got World Relief, which is a arm of the National Association of Evangelicals. You've got the Church World Services, which is part of the National Council of Churches. And you've got the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which is affiliated with Reform Jewish Movement. And then you've got 3 other agencies among the 9 which are secular, like the International Rescue Committee and a couple of others. But they are paid by the government, as I said, and they are paid on a per-head basis. So for every refugee they resettle in an American city, they get paid a little over $2,000, and they get to keep about half of that. The rest goes to help the refugees.
Right.
But that's not the only way they make money. They can make money in various other ways. They get grants to provide. After they bring the refugee here, they then get grants from the government to provide services to the refugee. Everything from marriage counseling to how to shop in an American grocery store to, you know, driver's training, all sorts of just you name it type services, how to survive in American cult, in American society. Because these people show up and they have no skills, they have zero job skills. Most of them are illiterate, even in their own language, let alone in English. They have no comprehension of English. And unfortunately, these agencies make a lot of money off of this, and they really pretty much abandon the refugee after about 6 or 8 months. And it's pretty much the they leave them to the they become the burden of the local city or town that they're in,
right,
or county or state, and they all have to pitch in to help these refugees who, as I said, have no job skills, no English skills, and how much English can you learn in about 6 or 8 months? So if you're illiterate in your own language.
Right.
Oh, and then there's another way that they make money. The federal government provides a loan to the refugee to purchase a plane ticket, because they have to fly here,
right,
from Africa, Asia, or the Middle East. And that could be quite expensive, maybe $1,000, $1,500 or more for a one-way plane ticket. And the local VOLAG, one of these nine agencies, isn't put in charge of collecting that loan. The refugee makes payments to pay back that loan, and the volunteer agency gets a percentage of all that money they collect. So they even stick it to the refugee as far as paying for his plane ticket and then taking a cut of it for themselves.
Right. That's ridiculous. Let me make a couple of little comments. Number one, what I really have a problem with it, I understand the paperhead thing because I deal with the homeless and poor, and I know how the agencies work. For every person that they beat or whatever, you know, they get paid by the government so much ahead. And so I understand the head thing and how it motivates their decisions on some things. But let's go with this. Here you have religious agencies that are bringing people in that pretty much in any way, shape, or form do not agree with the religion and just as soon would kill them in a sense, you know, if they were going according to religion. But yet they, instead of being a religious agency and trying to change them and save them, what they're doing, they're using them, it's business. And the church shouldn't be a business. And that's the big problem. That's a very, very big problem with
it. It is absolutely run like a business. You're 100% correct on that, Dan. In fact, there was a big thing in the news this week. I had a story on it yesterday that World Relief is closing 5 offices nationwide and laying off 140 employees. Why? Because President Trump is cutting the ceiling on refugees. He's reduced it from 110 refugees this year, which was set by President Obama. He's dropped that down to 50,000 refugees, so he's cut it by about 60%. And
I got to interrupt. I let it go by me. We're going to have to go to a break, but I read that article, and we can talk about it when we come back. But folks, you can find his articles at worldnetdaily.com. You can Google his book and find it most anywhere, Amazon or everything, or you could go through WorldNet Daily and buy it, because after all, they are the publishers. But sign up for WorldNet Daily emails, and they send out daily commentaries and things. And if you don't go over there, if you haven't been to worldnetdaily.com, I strongly encourage you to do it. And hey, we'll be back with more Leo in 3 minutes. We're back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour on the American Voice Radio Network. Well, folks, we're doing live radio. I really, really do love live radio. I couldn't do pre-recorded. Anyway, this is a time I need to ask you real quickly to pray about a donation for the Wichita Mission Church. You know, I just blinked my eyes, and we've been doing this 17 years. Well, it'll be 18th year we'll start the 1st of June. And over those years, we've helped thousands and thousands and thousands of people. I can't go anywhere in Wichita where people don't come up to me and say, "Hey, Pastor Dan," and yell at me across the parking lot and come running up, and they're thankful either for shoes I got them or for a prayer I said and it changed their life. Or, you know, picking them up literally off the sidewalk when they were drunk and helping them, and now they're a store manager. The stories go on and on and on. And really, I'm serious. I can hardly go anywhere in Wichita without being recognized. And I don't say that to brag. It's just that we've helped so many people. And how have we did that? Because we don't sell anything. Well, of course, the Father Yeshua, you know, and Yeshua is the first answer, but he uses people. People like you that listen to us on radio is what funds the Wichita Mission Church. We can't do it without you. And right now, we're in a really bad slump because of the economy and everything. And so we just really pray that tonight that you would please consider a donation for what we do. And it's not what we do, really. It's what the Father does through us. So why do so many people come to us for help? Well, love, that is the answer. And they're treated as family. And we don't have any set guidelines like programs. People just walk in the door and ask for what they need. That's the rule. We don't have any forms to fill out. Then if we do not have the way to fill a need, we pray it in. And so that's even why the agencies tell their employees about the Father's Little Mission Church. You see, when guidelines stop them from helping, they send people to us. People who have millions of dollars in their budget send people to a place that really has no budget. We are the last hope for so many. And folks, we are responsible to care one for another as we are our brother's keepers. All donations, no matter what size, helps. And the Father notices all donations that come from where? Your heart. You can donate online or mail a check or money order, and you can find all that information at prophecyhour.com. That's prophecyhour.com. And if you don't wish, if you're getting something out of these radio programs, again, we don't sell anything, and so we're only on radio through your good graces and gifts to us. So pray about supporting radio airtime. And now we're back with Leo Homan, and we're talking about his book, Stealth Invasion. Leo, you're still with me?
I am.
Well, I want to really get to a subject that we were hit at the last of the radio program last week, and we were talking about why a young Muslim, what would motivate them to all of a sudden become, you know, go to jihad, or for that matter, what's their motivation to want to come clear over here from another country? You said, well, you would address that this time, so I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, good question. There is a doctrine in the Quran called the Hijra, and Hijra is just an Arabic word for migration. And it's a very sacred thing in Islam to make hijra. The reason being, Muhammad made hijra back in the 7th century. He was, as you know, originally from Mecca. And after he had this new religion revealed to him in a cave from the archangel, he started talking about it. Well, people in Mecca didn't want to hear anything about it. So he had a hard time there gathering very many followers. So he made hijra to Medina. And when he moved up there to Medina, he had much more luck and with his message. And he started enriching himself and building up his ranks. He was peaceful at first, you know, but after he got enough of his ranks built up, he started attacking nearby Jewish villages and brutally attacking them and taking their women as booty. And that was where it also is in the Quran that you can take the woman on your right hand and as booty in a battle such of conquest. And so that example was set, as well as the hijra. And so to this day, hijra is seen as second only to jihad in importance to Allah. So if you die while on Hijra in a foreign country, you are going to be welcomed into heaven by Allah with great favor. So that is why you have, you know, people from Somalia willing to go and live in Alaska, you know, of all places. Anchorage, Alaska has Somali refugees. And they have a mosque there where there was none before. So they are spreading Islam to a non-Islamic land. That's what Hijra is all about. And well, so absolutely. We see. Yeah.
Let me throw a couple comments in here. First, that's pretty astounding. Somebody lives in, you know, one of the hottest places on the planet, you know, moves to one of the coldest places on the planet.
Yeah.
You really have to have some extreme motivation. But that goes to the thing. So the public, I don't think the public realizes that their whole motivation to come into our country isn't that one to assimilate. It is that one to eventually someday take over the United States. Am I correct then in saying that?
You are correct. You know, and if, and I'm not saying every single Muslim wants to, quote,
right,
take over, but once the population is strong enough, even peaceful Muslims who don't want to live by Sharia law would be endangered. You can look at any majority Muslim country in the world and see this. You know, you cannot live according to freedom of speech and freedom of religion in any country that's Muslim. Saudi Arabia, you're not even allowed to, you won't find a single church in Saudi Arabia. It's completely illegal to build a church there. And if you're caught with a Bible, it is the death penalty. In other countries like Pakistan, there are still churches, but they are persecuted Christians and treated as second-class citizens. They call them dhimmis. You live under a dhimmi contract with the with a Muslim majority country if you're not Muslim, where you agree to pay a jizya tax, and in return for that tribute tax, which can be, you know, very expensive, 50% or more of your income. In return for that, the Muslim government will protect you, and by that they mean they will allow you to continue practicing your faith as long as you don't spread it among the Muslims. You have to keep it to yourself.
Right.
And there's all sorts of rules as far as, you know, you can't build a church, you can't even maintain a church without a special permit, you can't, your church bells cannot ring, you cannot have outward symbols of like a cross or anything, your choir cannot sing over a certain level of decibels, it can't, so it won't be heard outside the church. All sorts of rules like that are in these so-called moderate Muslim countries, you know, like Egypt and Pakistan and such. Oh, and if you utter the slightest criticism of Islam as a Christian in these countries, you will be jailed and possibly killed for violating the Islamic blasphemy laws. As you know, there's a woman, a Christian woman in Pakistan, Asia Bibi, I believe is her name, and she has been in prison for like 6 or 7 years for putting for saying something that was considered anti-Islamic, and it was just the slightest thing. And here you have this mother and wife who's been locked up for all those years in Pakistan. It's just a brutal existence.
Well, you know, it really astounds me how the people on the left are, you know, they're so enthralled with wanting to bring these people here, but they would not want to live under Sharia law.
Right.
In that mannerism. It just doesn't really make sense, except maybe.
And there's
it's
one
just
other thing, Dan, that I forgot to mention about the nine contractors, the volunteer agencies.
Okay.
As we mentioned, six of them are religious in nature. But they sign a contract with the U.S. State Department agreeing not to proselytize the refugees.
Really?
So they call themselves Christian charities and charitable organizations. Well, you could make an argument that they're neither charitable nor Christian, because my idea of charity is you would raise your own private money, not use the government's money and, you know, the forced tax dollars of working Americans. So I don't see where they're true charitable organizations. And then they agree not to proselytize or evangelize the refugees, so I don't know how Christian they are either. So it's really just a big scam and a big fraud.
Well, money, greed has overwhelmed many, many, many of the religious organizations, and I've seen it firsthand. In fact, I've got Bibles donated to me from somebody that worked at Red Cross because they took money, that government money, they had to get all the Bibles out of their waiting rooms. And so a worker brought them down and gave them to me, and then he got fired for giving them to me.
Oh, my goodness.
Just a crazy, 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 crazy example. But so money has taken over these things. People, you need to be careful of what you're involved with. But let me ask you this question that I really want you to answer. You know, so, okay, let's say, that, you know, a Muslim comes to America and either, you know, the parent, you know, gets westernized, or the child, and
right.
westernized, he goes to nightclubs and does things, but all of a sudden he commits jihad. What's up with that?
Yeah, what we have found both in Europe and in the United States is that the second generation of these Muslim refugee families is actually more likely to commit jihad than the original immigrant. The Belgium attack, the France attack, the Orlando, Florida attack, remember, at the Pulse nightclub, the Chattanooga shooting, these were all conducted by young men who were either born in the United States or were little children when their parents came as refugees or immigrants from these Islamic countries. And you could hypothesize as to why that is, but I've talked to a lot of Muslims and former Muslims, and they tell me that, you know, the father is unlikely who comes here to strike out against the nation that brought him, but he also is going to you know, raise his children in a Muslim, as a good Muslim family as best he can. He's going to maybe bicker and complain about America a lot. The children grow up with a lot of anti-American invective, hearing this day in and day out, but mm-hmm. while at the same time becoming more westernized themselves, more westernized than their parents. But something happens when they get into their early mid-20s to late 20s. Between 20 and 30, almost every one of these jihadists seems to attack between the age 20 and 30. They have lived a promiscuous Western lifestyle, gone to nightclubs, drank, maybe smoked marijuana, slept with women. All these things that would be sinful according to Islam, and maybe stopped going to mosque while they were doing that, enjoying this, you know, Western lifestyle.
Right.
Well, my friend Dr. Mark Christian, who's a former imam, explained to me, he was former Muhammad Abdullah of Cairo, Egypt, who became a Christian and changed his name to Mark Christian, and his father was an imam as well, very prominent family that he broke off from and became a Christian. But he explained to me that what would happen to one of these young men if they had lived this sinful Western lifestyle while they were in high school, say, or in college, and then they get out of college and maybe they have a come to Allah moment and they start going back to mosque, and the imam tells them, you know, son, you've been very negligent in keeping your daily prayers. A Muslim is supposed to pray five times a day, right?
Right, right.
And you've been very negligent in your giving of alms and zakat. You're going to have... How long have you not been to a mosque? About 5 years. You're going to have to make up all those prayers and all that almsgiving. And this could be a little bit overwhelming to the young man. But there is one way that you could negate all of that and not have to make up all that lost time and lost prayers. Go on jihad, because we all know that jihad gets you an instant ticket into heaven and all good graces restored from Allah. And so this is why you see, you know, the Chattanooga shooter. He was very popular in high school. He drank. He had a lot of girlfriends. He in college, and it was after college he started growing out his beard, becoming more religious, going to mosque again, and before we know it, he shoots five U.S. servicemen unarmed at the Navy Recruiting Center in Chattanooga. Same thing with the Orlando shooter, same thing, as I said, with many of those who were involved in the Brussels, Belgium attack and the Paris attack. It really is remarkable to see this pattern.
Well, you know, so now a lot of people are saying, well, you know, okay, well, great, Trump's in office, you know, which I'm glad, amen. He's in office, and he's going to be able to roll back some of this. But do we, two questions, give me a second. Can he roll it back? Because I see such hatred and everything towards him.
Yeah.
But the kids have been indoctrinated in the schools and so on and so forth. How far has this thing came in America? How many are here? Is it too late?
We have 3.3 million Muslims in America. About 80% of the mosques that you see in America have been built since 2000 or right around 9/11. So it's grown exponentially, no question about it. And it's not just major cities, like I said, anymore. It's a lot of medium and small-sized cities have mosques now. But I don't think it's too late, no. It is much closer to too late for many European countries, because if you think 3.3 Muslims, while it's grown exponentially over the last 25 years, I mean, I think back in 1965 or 67, we had like 100 and some thousand Muslims. I mean, 150,000 or something like that. So in just, you know, 50 years, we've gone from 150,000 to 3.3 million. And 65% of those are foreign born. Excuse me.
Right, right.
They've been. It's not this religion has not grown organically. It is solely, almost solely, the result of importing foreign refugees and other sorts of migrants, and then some conversions, as you know, among in the prison ministries. That's
right.
How it has grown. But it's not too late, because Germany, for instance, has more Muslims than that in a country half the size, you know, less than half the size population. So the UK has 5%, and you know, and Sweden, my goodness, it is a small country, only 10 million people, and well over a million Muslims. So, you know, like 1.5 to 2 million Muslims. It's crazy what's happened to Sweden over the last 20 years. So that Sweden might be the first to fall. But, oh, by the way, there was a great quote from a Catholic Archbishop of Italy a few weeks ago, Archbishop Liberati, said that within 10 years, Europe will be Muslim.
Really?
Yeah.
I can see it. I can see it, and it goes back to my brain thinking. I see pictures of places like France and what's going on in England and what's going on in Germany and the women being raped and all these things. But yet the leaders of these countries are still saying they want them there. Are they just gone? I don't get their motivation. I really don't, to see their country destroyed.
Well, it's really interesting what's going on over there. Paris, as we speak this week, has been undergoing race riots. I mean, just horrific stuff. And Marie Le Pen, who is the conservative far-right candidate there who wants to end all this migration, is ahead in the polls. And, you know, it could be another Donald Trump-type surprise over there. She's running. I don't know if she's number one, but she's either number one or number two in the polls, and rising fast. And we could see a huge upset there. Germany is Angela Merkel is in danger. She is up for re-election this fall. I can't see her getting re-elected. You know, they're trying to push back and act like they made a mistake now. Have you seen some of the news reports? There's like even Sweden and Germany have started deporting some of these people.
I do follow the news. I spend several hours on it every day.
Angela Merkel banned the burqa in public places.
That shocked me. I didn't think she's just desperate for votes, I think.
She is desperate, exactly. And I guarantee if she were to get elected, she would slip right back into her old ways. But, I don't think it was a mistake. I think she did what the globalist people who control her asked her to do. The United Nations has been running cover for this migration for years, this historic shift of population from the Middle East and Africa into the Western democracies. And in my opinion, it's a direct attempt to cause instability and division in our countries and wear us down and make us more fearful, and we'll then accept more of these intrusive police measures to keep us safe. So it's like importing the problem and then coming up with the fix.
That's order out of chaos, right?
Order out of chaos, exactly.
Yeah, this is just all, actually, what it boils down to, folks, let me tell the folks a minute, what it boils down to is globalism. They want a one-world government, they want it run one way, no borders, and that's really what it's all about, and why they keep pushing the Muslims out. I guess they're kind of like army for it, I would guess. Back to you.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I believe there's an unholy alliance, Dan, between the secular left globalist crew and the Islamists, the fundamentalist Islamists, and I believe they too work hand in hand to create this global super state that we're talking about, global governance, lack of borders. And they would seem to have nothing in common, but if you want to talk a little more about that, they actually do, the Islamists and the secular left in this unholy alliance. We've seen it really shaking out over the last few years where the leftists are just clamoring to support the Muslims. It's really strange.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? We're coming back down to a couple of minutes, and you know what? I'm going to write that in my notes, and maybe a little later on I'll get you back on and we'll discuss
that. Yeah, that would be another whole topic.
That would be a great topic, and we could do a program on it. But so any advice, you know, other than the fact that I really believe people need to read your book, but other than that, what should the normal, you know, Joe do out there? You know, any advice?
Well, they need to, number one, study up on the basics of Islam. This is something that I know you're teaching it, Pastor Dan, but most pastors are not. In fact, most Christian pastors are embracing Islam, trying to say that, you know, it's not that different. They believe in Jesus. They believe in God. You know, it's really not that different. We need to reach out and embrace our Muslim brothers as they are, which I do believe we should embrace them, but not without telling them the truth about their religion. Their religion is starkly evil in many ways. And I'm not saying the people are all evil. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm saying that the Islamic texts, which inspire jihad, are evil. And not all Muslims go on jihad. And those who despise jihad and despise Sharia law, like I said, if they were to come to the point where we were a Muslim majority country, they would be persecuted along with the rest of us.
Right, absolutely. Okay, we only got about a minute left. And by the way, folks, if you go over to prophecyhour.com, I put a thing up called Jesus in the Hadith, and I got the idea from your book today, and I put up all the places where Yeshua or Jesus is in the Hadith, and you'll find it pretty shocking. Well, I'm glad to have you on, and again, they can get your book at WorldNet Daily, and I appreciate it. You're a man that really knows what you're doing, and keep up the good reports. And, brother, it be your will, we'll talk again.
Absolutely. Would enjoy to be back on the show again. Thanks, Dan.
All right. I'll get you on at 5 o'clock next time. All right. You be blessed. All right. You be blessed.
Bless
Thanks
you.
For coming on. Bye-bye. Goodbye and
bye.
Shalom. Well, folks, that was Leo Holman. I get his book, Stealth Invasion. I'm not trying to push it. I guess I am trying to push his book. Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Migration and Resettlement Jihad. You need to understand these things. You really need to understand. I know most of you don't have time for all these things. That's why you listen to this radio program, and that's why you should very well support it. Anyway, go over to my website, look for an article on the front page. It's called Jesus and the Hadith. Everybody should read that. Anyway, I got to go pray about supporting either Airtime or the Wichita Mission Church. And you just really, really, we do need your support. You must remember, though, there is only one God. And who is he? He is your Father. He's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His Son is Yeshua HaMashiach. And he gave his life for your repented sins. He rose after what? You remember? 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And he said that for a reason. But through him, and only through him, is the way to the Father. That is his identifying marker. 3 days and three nights. Remember that. Remember, always, 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 I can't say it too much, be a blessing to others. Lord our God, Father, King of the universe, I ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's mighty name, that, Father, that you would bless and keep them, and that your face would shine upon them, Father, and be gracious to them, and please give them peace like no one or nothing else can. Until next Thursday, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.